It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, and Austin Price. Appreciate you guys for joining us here today. Appreciate Exterior Home Solutions for, as always, being the presenting sponsor of this show. 865-524-5888. Online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and trusted since 1999. Roofing, garage, siding, all that and more. Contact Exterior Home Solutions if you have a need today. Gators Online, Nick De La Torre is going to join us here in about 15, 20 minutes to give us the inside scoop on the Florida Gators. Big week coming up. Brent Hubbs, Tennessee, Florida. It is Florida week, a massive game. Tennessee returns home, and they got to find a way to try to flip that script and move on from a frustrating weekend in Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a big rivalry game. You know, Florida's going to show up ready to play. Tennessee's going to have to continue to try to get the monkey off their back there and take care of business. But the biggest thing Tennessee's got to do is they've got to find themselves offensively right now, because Austin, they're not in a great spot offensively. They're out of rhythm, out of sync. The last 2 weeks for various reasons. Part of it at Oklahoma was they took the foot off the gas because of pass protection issues, but those pass protection issues showed back up again on Saturday against Arkansas. And, you know, teams are doing some stuff to Tennessee defensively, with how they're playing Tennessee's offense. That's given Tennessee's offense some issues.
Yeah, clearly Tennessee knows that, you know, these teams are going to continue to throw something similar at them. Maybe it's not the exact same thing that Oklahoma did or Arkansas did, but it'll be, you know, similar. And, you know, so, I mean, now they've got to figure out a way to adjust. You know, teams have adjusted to Coach Heupel on the offense. Now he's got to, you know, pull out the old chess pieces and you know, have a different way of going about things and adjust to them and counter it. So, you'll be interested to see what they do. Do they try to do anything different in protection? You know, do they do something different with the routes, of certain plays? Will that change, just to kind of give Nico, some shorter stuff to throw to? Do you see the backs get more involved out of the backfield? I don't know if that's the case, 'cause that's just not something they do a ton of, but, you know, I think they just have to figure it out, whether that's, you know, extra blockers or, you know, rolling the pocket, you know, as you talked about, you know, earlier this week, Brent. I mean, I think that's a, a great way to try to get Nico out and about, and he seems to throw the ball pretty well on the run.
Rob, I've talked to these guys on the rewind and so on and so forth since the game, but I want to get your thoughts. I mean, obviously, you know, Tennessee had some struggles offensively. Defense wasn't perfect, but played well enough to win that football game. Your overall thoughts from Tennessee's offensive performance? Kind of narrowing it down to, you know, why does this offense look different the last couple of weeks than what we've seen in years past and, you know, beginning of the season and against NC State?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot to add. I mean, I don't think there's one thing. I mean, I think it's a combination. I mean, certainly, you know, the pass protection issues, you know, really hamstring you as a play caller. And I think it's compounded when you've got a young quarterback, you know, who you're trying to take care of a little bit, probably on the road. And you know, if you don't want to throw into the dogs. And so, you know, you're going to be reluctant to dial up a lot of stuff if you're worried about, you know, keeping him upright. But then, and then, you know, going hand in hand with that, with taking care of a young quarterback, not being able to run the football, or at least not being able to run the football authoritatively, you know, like we've seen this team do at times. I mean, they were able to get by, you know, with the ground game here and there, but they weren't gashing Arkansas like we've seen them do SEC defenses under Heupel. And, you know, you're not winning a lot of one-on-one battles at receiver. I mean, it's just, you know, it's coach speak, but it's a combination of things, and none of them are good. I mean, you're struggling to protect your new starting quarterback. You're struggling to run the ball, and receivers don't appear, at least to me. I'm not watching the All-22 film, but it doesn't appear that they're winning a lot of one-on-one battles, and Nico's just missing a ton of wide-open guys. I mean, to me, there's a lot, you know, I don't want to say it's completely broken, but there's a lot of things that, you know, need to be fixed on that offense right now. It's not just, you know, one or two things.
Yeah, I mean, if you sit here as a fan, you're watching TV or you're at the game, you're just pointing at the quarterback like, oh, man, Nico's awful. you know, it's Nico's fault or we miss Alex Golish or all this type of stuff. And I don't think any of us are sitting here saying Nico played to the level that he's capable of playing or that Tennessee needs him to play. I mean, he's got to get better, Brent. But when you look at it, I mean, I thought Rob kind of painted that beautifully there. I mean, you can't protect him. You know, looking on the outside, are the receivers running consistent routes? Are the eyes in the right place for Nico? You know, running game, I think that it's been fine, but as Rob pointed out, you're not gashing them. I mean, everything builds off the run game. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I mean, it is Nico's got to be better. Nico's got to be better than he was last week and a little bit of Oklahoma, but it is a unit that's got to take a step in a major way, and it's not going to get any easier. You get to come home, and that's good because Tennessee plays well at home, and you know some of the crowd noise and all that, but you know the competition, right? I mean, you got Florida, you got, you know, Alabama coming up, you know, Kentucky's got a really good front, Georgia down the horizon. I mean, this whole group has got to take a step.
Well, and I mean, listen, I mean, it's hard to play quarterback if you're on your back. It's hard to play quarterback if you're running, you know, and having to scramble and run for a lot. Tennessee's running back's got to be better in pass protection. Tennessee's tight ends can be better in pass protection. I do think that's why you've got to make some tweaks with Nico to help him out a little bit and get him outside the pocket and do some things. Cause I don't think you're going to the waiver wire and getting help. I don't think that you're going to be sitting here right now and say, okay, they're going to wave a magic wand this week and suddenly all their protection problems are going to get fixed. I just don't feel like that's going to be the case. I said back at the NC State game, I don't think Nico got sacked in that game, but he got hit too much. He got sacked against Kent State. He was sacked against Oklahoma. I mean, he's just been hit too much. And I don't know that you can just fix that right away. Obviously guys have to play better, but I don't know that there's a magic fix to it for this week. So you've got to help the front out. You've got to help the quarterback out. I think that's why I'm moving him around in the pocket or rolling him out some. Seems to make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, Austin, I thought that first play of the game was really, really nice. You know, got him out of the pocket, rolled him around a little bit, you know, pick up of, you know, 14 or 15. Of course, a penalty, you know, negated that, called it back. And that's something I think is hindering this offense when you look at tempo. It's you got to get up there on the line. You got to push the tempo. But when you're not winning first downs, that hurts tempo. When you're out of shape, that hurts tempo. When you're getting penalized, that hurts tempo. I like that play design on the first one they did. And, you know, it felt like we didn't see that really hardly at all, kind of moving him around and trying to help him out a little bit when things got tough.
Yeah, and, you know, Tennessee has been traditionally, under Josh Heupel, a quick-starting team. They've had success, you know, and you know, being able to score early and score often, and not just the first series, but, you know, the first quarter. And, you know, it felt like had they, you know, and again, it's easy to say it was one play, but it felt like, okay, they're poised to start with a good solid drive, right? And then just all of a sudden you're playing behind the sticks. And this was after Arkansas had taken more than, you know, half the first quarter off the clock. And so, you know, again, figuring out a way to get him involved more, you know, giving him some confidence. I think all those things are, you know, paramount this week against a Florida defense that still has good athletes, you know, and they still have playmakers. So, you know, they're going to, you know, give you their best shot early. So I think, you know, whatever they can script up early in this football game to give him some confidence, the better.
Yeah. I'm a little bit baffled, Rob, by the fact that it feels like one negative thing for this offense is a derailer. It derails things in a drive. I mean, I'm a little surprised by the fact that one negative play or one thing seems to really derail or prevent a drive from ever getting going. It seems interesting to me they can't seem to overcome those kind of things like I thought they would be able to.
Well, I mean, they have it against the two SEC defenses they played, and that's really, you know, all that matters. You know, right now, I mean, it might be a small sample size, but it certainly is the one that counts. I mean, if you look at what they did, you know, in the other three games. So I don't think there's like one easy fix, but I also don't think it's just like, you know, it's over. Like they can't, you know, they can't fix it. I mean, I think that they, you know, you got to get better at several spots, but it's not like you have to get light years better. you know, but you do have to make improvements at multiple positions. And I think that makes it look worse because it's not just the pass protection. It's not just receivers. But they just – the chunk plays just aren't there. And, I think a lot of that is the pass protection. But – and I'm not going to – Hubbard, you're way more in the weeds on this 3-3-5 stuff than me, understanding it. But, you know, I don't know how much of – you know, is it just, you know – they're not blocking it up, getting a hat on a hat, that the chunk plays aren't there in the ground game. Because that, you know, it's easier for me to understand the pass offense, you know, sputtering with the pass protection issues. But they've always been able to gash people on the ground. You know, maybe not for 300 yards, but multiple 10, 12, 15-yard runs that move the chains and get the tempo popping. And that's not been happening against Oklahoma and Arkansas. And I don't know if it's as simple as they're not blocking up, you know, the 3-3-5 like you've been talking about, or if it's, you know, like Josh Heupel lead pretty hard on. There was a lot of guys losing one-on-one battles at Arkansas in his mud.
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit of that their teams are playing some cat and mouse games with the quarterback in the back end. Is the box heavy or is the box light? What are you trying to figure out there? When you get it right, you seem to be able to hit a play or two like you did to open the second half running the football at Arkansas. But then when you don't get it right, man, you got a lot of safeties making a lot of plays at the line of scrimmage in the run game. And so I think that it's – listen, I mean, Josh Heupel has – everybody's tried to do everything under the sun to stop this offense for a long time. I don't know that Oklahoma unlocked it, Eric, to the point of, well, they've all figured it out. Everybody's figured it out now. This offense doesn't work. I think that's an extreme overreaction. But I think Tennessee has to have some more counters to some of that stuff that they're going to see, particularly with the pass protection issues that they have right now, until they can get to the point where they're winning one-on-one battles the way that they need to. So does it create some problems, that stuff schematically? I'm sure it does, but, I mean, do we really think that they haven't seen that through the years? You know, I mean, they've had some – I don't know that that's the kryptonite that sometimes we want to make it out to be, because that's what we've seen the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Tennessee prepped for Arkansas. Tennessee watched film. Tennessee dove into the analytics and everything, and Arkansas had not shown that front. Now, Dane Davis gets up there on Monday and said, they came in something different, but it's not anything we haven't seen before. It's not anything we haven't gone up against before. Josh Heupel's seen this defense when he was at UCF. He's seen this defense several times here when he's been at Tennessee. It's up to, as you said, it's up to Tennessee's staff to create those wrinkles and adjust to the adjustments. I think the staff does well in coming up with a game plan and going in with a certain game plan and trying to attack a specific, you know, part of this defense or whatever. But in-game adjustments, I haven't seen many, and I'm sure there are, but I haven't seen many. And I think that's where the staff needs to take a step, in my opinion. Austin, now, question is, you know, Florida, what's Florida going to come out here and do defensively? If I'm Florida, if I'm any other team in the schedule, I'm repping that, you know, that stack look, and I'm having that in my back pocket if needed. Doesn't have to be your base that game, but I'm repping it and I'm having it ready. Florida on the season, man, gave up 310 on the ground to A&M, gave up 240 on the ground at Mississippi State. So if you want to get this offense back on the right foot, Tennessee needs to do what it does, and that's run the football, dominate the run game, and build off of that. And I think that opportunity is going to be there this weekend because the Gators simply are not good defending the run.
They haven't been to this point. Yes. Obviously, you know, they can make some type of phenomenal adjustments and they all of a sudden can stop the run. But, you know, to this point, they have not been able to slow down many teams. And so you're right. Tennessee, I'm sure, will look to, you know, do what they've been doing. I mean, you look at Dylan Sampson, he's second in the SEC in rushing. The guy continues to just, you know, produce. And I think you'll lean on the ground. And again, I think, you know, maybe that helps Nico, because it's going to cause them to come up and, you know, you're going to end up with, you know, more opportunities to hit some passes in the passing game. But, you know, I'm definitely leaning on Dylan Sampson early and often.
We got Nick Della Torre coming on here in a matter of moments, real quick before we get to him. It's early in the week, so things can change. But Optimistic, at least, in terms of the injury report. Brent Hubbs from Josh Hoplaw Monday, nothing season-ending. Tennessee got beat up in that game a little bit. I think Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday's availability reports are going to be key. But it seems like Tennessee, for the most part, avoided any big injuries from that football game.
Well, I mean, you know, Josh Heupel didn't give the "we feel like everybody's going to be all right" speech either for Saturday. So I think that, I think Tennessee's going to be down, you know, a body or two. We'll see where Brew McCoy is. We'll see where Squirrel White is with that. He's right. I mean, he said nobody was out for the year, but he also didn't say they would all be ready to go this weekend. So, yeah. I mean, if you're without those two bodies in the passing game, you know, the two places that you – two guys you trust as much as anybody or maybe more than anybody else, what do they look like there at receiver? You know, or do you go two tight ends and you play – you know, you play that look and see if Florida wants to play a three-man front against that, right? Do they play that – do they play this game a little bit more like they played the NC State game, that type of thing? I mean, what's interesting to me is that Oklahoma played a little bit more 3-3-5. Arkansas played a little bit more 3-2-6 with playing a dime package back there. Mm-hmm. So how's Florida going to try to approach this, and what does Tennessee go from there, particularly if they're depleted at the – you know, we're down – a couple of key bodies at the receiver position. How does that change their offensive attack against whatever Florida's trying to do? And I mean, we've heard this. This is a bit unusual to me too. It seems like every game that's like, well, they did some stuff they didn't show on film. That's been kind of a common phrase for Tennessee post game, win or lose. There's been a lot. Well, they, you know, that we had to adjust to some things because that's not what they had really shown on film. So I think people are trying to do some unorthodox type things and get away from their tendencies against Tennessee, which goes back to your point, Eric. You got to continue to adjust in game and tweak as you go along in game, because you're not getting necessarily what you see on the scouting report every time.
Yeah, and you and I talked about this on Monday, Brent. I mean, I think there's a difference in never having repped a stack look before a three, an odd front or whatever, or it's been in your playbook and you went over it and install in spring and then in camp and maybe a little bit in fall camp. That's just not normally what you line up in, but you've had it in the back pocket. I think there's kind of a difference. So like, I think a lot of these teams have that in the playbook. They probably should. It's just not who they are. So for Arkansas still, I mean, it's impressive nonetheless. Arkansas, you know, ran with that this past weekend and obviously found some success. So,
well, everybody has a dime package. Everybody's got a 6DB package. Just most teams don't live in it. And Arkansas lived in it throughout the game on Saturday. So we'll see what Florida elects to do, how they approach it, what Tennessee's counter is to that. It's part of the chess matches of football games within the football game on Saturdays.
We will get a scout from the Florida Gators, from Nick Della Torre of Gators Online, when we come back here on the VolQuest podcast. Do you want to say about our friends over at Game Time? Game Time, you put in this promo code. If you download the Game Time app, put in this promo code. It's on three. You're going to get $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, you download this Game Time app, put in the promo code on three. You're going to get $20 off. Create an account on that. Go to gametime.co if you don't want to download the app. But what Game Time is, it's a place where you can buy tickets to events in your area. So Tennessee, Florida tickets this weekend. Tennessee, Bama tickets coming up in 2 weeks. Basketball tickets for basketball season. Reigning national champion Tennessee baseball. Going to look in a not completed, but a renovated Lindsey Nelson Stadium this spring. Tennessee Smokies, but not just sports. It can be concerts in the area, the Bijou Theater, the Tennessee Theater, all that and more. You can buy tickets to those events, okay, on the Game Time app. You can check out the lowest price guarantee, where Game Time is going to credit you 110% of the difference if you find a cheaper ticket in the same section somewhere else. All in prices plus the Game Time picks, where it filters out all the fluff, only showing you incredible deals on great seats that you don't waste time searching through everything else. So download the Game Time app today. Again, terms apply. Put in that promo code on three, and you're going to get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. And as always, let's get a word from our proud sponsors, the presenting sponsors of the show. That is Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Starlin, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Hey, Sterl, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby!
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Tennessee and Florida. It is a rivalry week. It is a game that means a whole lot to a lot of people and a game that's magnified, right, Brent? You've got Billy Napier, who's very much on the hot seat. You got a Florida team that started 1-2, didn't look good, and albeit the competition's gone down for a brief moment in that schedule, they've looked good the last 2 weeks. And then, of course, you got Tennessee coming off a hard loss. A massive football game set to be played in Neyland Stadium.
Yeah, and you've got a rivalry in a game where Tennessee's lost this matchup to Florida seemingly every way possible for the last two decades. They've won some of them, but they've lost a lot of games in a lot of heartbreaking ways. So you know that this thing is going to be a 60-minute dogfight on Saturday, and we'll see what both of these teams look like when they get to the field. Should be fun.
So to tell us a little bit more about the Florida Gators, we're going to welcome onto the show from Gators Online, Nick Delatorre. Nick, I appreciate you as always for joining us and helping us out here whenever Tennessee and Florida clash. So far, the season overall, I know it started off really challenging. It's going to continue to be very challenging, but some success the last couple of weeks, and it feels like fans are at least happy at the moment, right? Is that premature?
Yeah. What time is it right now? I'll let you know in another half hour. Florida just completed the easy portion of their 2024 schedule, which included Miami and Texas A&M. So it will be interesting to see. You know, nobody snatches defeat out of the jaws of victory quite like Tennessee when they play Florida, finding new and innovative ways to lose to the Gators. But certainly I think Vegas is heavily favoring Tennessee this week, and Florida will have their hands full. They have to feel good winning two games in a row. Reminds me of the Major League quote, we won yesterday. If we win today, that's two. If we win tomorrow, that's a winning streak. Florida hasn't been on a winning streak in a while, but certainly a tough task. It's going to be an absolute rowdy environment, I'm sure, in Neyland. Bummed to miss it, not making the road trip with our newborn here. But it's going to be a great trip and a great game. I'm sure the environment will be as raucous as it was for Morgan Wallen a couple of weeks ago.
Nick, when you look at this Florida defense, I'm trying to get a handle on sort of what they are. Texas A&M comes in with a running quarterback and they run hog wild. Florida beats Mississippi State, but State puts up a bunch of rushing yards. I don't know how hollow some of those yards were. Then UCF can't run at all against Florida. Where is this defense at right now compared to where they were against Miami and where they were against Texas A&M?
Well, they've been atrocious. One of the worst third down defenses in the country. One of the worst rushing defenses in the country. I kind of expected UCF to run for 400 yards against Florida. I don't know who that defense was that we saw on Saturday night in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. And I don't know if that is the real Florida Gator defense or if it's just playing down to their opponents. There weren't a lot of hollow yards in Starkville. Mississippi State kind of dominated the line of scrimmage. And I guess that's where Florida fans, obviously, with the loss to Miami and the loss to A&M, and you only have a Samford win in there, not really feeling great about that, are still angry at the program and are kind of looking at these last two wins, while happy that they got to celebrate a win, looking at them as hollow, as, well, it's Mississippi State's pretty bad and UCF, maybe they're not good. Are they going to win a Big 12 game this year after, you know, the TCU win? So a lot will ride on this Tennessee game. It would be crazy. Someone on our message board asked me, what if Florida wins the next two and they go into their second bye week before Georgia at 5-2? And I thought, I've never thought about that after watching Florida the first month of the season. That was not a possibility that crossed my mind. But Florida's defense, I think, is riding a little wave of confidence here. They looked really good. They were swarming to the ball. Now, UCF is one-dimensional by design. And I think Tennessee, Nico's not necessarily a running quarterback, but certainly capable of running. Obviously can make, Billy Napier said today, he's making throws 15, 20, 25 yards down the field on either side of the hash, obviously arm strength. So Tennessee's also not a finesse team. They can attack you in multiple ways, big front, rushing the ball. So it's certainly going to be a massive step up in quality of opponent for Florida's defense from their last two games.
Yeah, Nick, I haven't watched Florida a lot. I watched a couple of those early matchups that we've been referencing. But, you know, on paper, I mean, Florida's always got talented players. I mean, there's always talent there, right? I mean, Shamar James, a linebacker, is a name that has been there for a while. Remember him in recruiting. You know, Jordan Castell is a guy that's playing pretty well at safety. I know one of the better players left him with the Ole Miss this offseason. I'm not even going to try to say his name, but everybody knows who I'm talking about. He's a really good player.
Princely Umamielen.
There we go. We got Iamaliava. Yeah. Y'all had that guy. But you know, on paper, again, we talked about the rush defense issues, but also not a whole lot of takeaways. Correct me if I'm wrong, an SEC low, I want to say 7 takeaways last year. For this year, would you characterize the defense as non-aggressive? How have they been calling it? Kind of how do you think they're going to attack, you know, Tennessee overall defensively?
Yeah, three interceptions last year, tied with Temple for last least in the country. This year, Florida's a -3 turnover margin. Just got an interception, which was their second of the year. The first came on the second drive against Miami. So it had been a couple quarters or a couple games since Florida had gotten an interception. I think fumbles, some of that is, you know, luck, depending on which way an oblong air-filled pigskin bounces once it hits the ground. Florida is aggressive. They will blitz. You know, they really run like a 34. A lot of they bring pressure from the edge. We've seen them blitz the safeties and corners a little bit more. A lot of that, though, will be dependent on what you're getting from Tennessee. And it was easy to do that against UCF because UCF made no mistake about it, made no, didn't try to hide it. They were going to run the football. So, hey, we're going to play man on the outside. We'll bring safeties down to the box. We'll blitz linebackers. I think Tennessee's too multiple to do that. So it'll be interesting to see if Florida stays as aggressive as they were against Mississippi State and UCF, or if Tennessee's offense kind of dictates them to, hey, we kind of keep Nico in the pocket. Don't let him hurt us with his feet a little bit and play more of, you know, a cover 4, cover 3 cloud kind of defense where we have more defensive backs on the field.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously been – I mean, Arkansas has talked about it since that game. You know, they played that 6 defensive back package and odd fronts and tried to attack it that way. Has Florida been a pretty good pass rush team? I mean, Tennessee's got pass protection issues, and they've struggled there. I mean, is this – would you characterize this as a pretty solid pass rush team or not near to the standard of Florida's from a pass rush standpoint?
Yeah, I think Miami's Cam Ward got a ticket for loitering. He had so much time to hang out in the pocket. So, no, it has not been a great pass rush team. Florida does get there, but doesn't really finish. You know, they get hurries, they get pressures, but just haven't been able to really get sacks. Obviously, last week they had 5, which was a season high for them, so they bumped up into the rankings. But in the first 4 games, I think only had 7 or 8 through 4 games. So they have some guys off the edge. Jack Pyburn's a guy who tore his ACL against Arkansas last November and just kind of keeps getting a little bit better and better. And then fourth-year junior, Tyreek Sapp, who's kind of played everywhere for Florida. He's having the best year of his career. So Florida has some guys, but no, they haven't really finished. They've affected some quarterbacks, but really that's just the last 2 weeks. And you know, we kind of get into what was the quality of the opponent, you know, when they were finally getting the pressures and finishing sacks.
All right, and let's flip it over to the offense for a second. How is the 2 quarterback thing working? Mm-hmm. And how has – because when Billy Napier announced that, I was like, I don't know about this dude, all that was going on. How has that worked, and how is this – team handled all of that outside noise about their coach?
Yeah, you almost get into like a bunker mentality when you start getting all this talk about your coach, but Billy Napier doesn't seem to really be affected by it. I mean, if I was going to be getting paid that kind of money to not work anymore, I probably wouldn't be affected by the talk either. But I think Florida offensively with the quarterbacks, I've said this all along, it's a great situation for DJ Lagway because you kind of get to come in. You've got a 6-year senior, a 24-year-old. He'll be able to rent a car soon without paying the extra money for insurance still playing college football, who isn't worried about losing his job. So he's not, you know, looking over his shoulder. He's more taking DJ under his wing, showing him how to prepare, whether that's a film room, prepare your body after practices, before games. The rotation, they've kind of flip-flopped it. DJ really didn't play at all against Miami until Graham went down with a concussion. Then he obviously started against Samford. They went every other drive against Texas A&M, which was kind of a nightmare because you don't really get into a rhythm of the game as a quarterback. So they scrapped that, and they've really been giving Graham two full drives, then get DJ one. Then give Graham two full drives, get DJ one. And it's been pretty strict in that way. DJ came in for his first drive against Mississippi State. Montrell Johnson, the running back, fumbles on the second play, and DJ's drive is now done. So I think the quarterbacks like it, specifically Graham. Just allows him to get into more of a flow. And they are so different skill-wise. Despite Graham Mertz having more rushing touchdowns than DJ this year, not the same kind of runner that DJ is, and doesn't really have the kind of big arm that Lagway does either. It seems to be working right now, but I think the biggest thing for Florida is, and I said this in the offseason, Billy Napier is going to have to save his job this year to be able to coach DJ Lagway next year. And you have to kind of walk that tightrope of Graham gives us the best chance to win this year, but I need to get DJ experience if I'm going to be here next year so that it's not, you know, big-eyed when he walks into LSU or go somewhere. So I said in the summer, hey, DJ needs to play in Neyland. He needs to feel that environment, feel the rivalry, because you don't want him going through those growing pains next year. Florida's not going to be competing for an SEC championship this year or a playoff berth. So you're kind of taking your lumps now to try to get these younger players ready for next year when you would expect to have, you know, a little bit better of a roster with some more experience.
So from Tennessee's perspective, I mean, obviously DJ Lagway's got the much higher ceiling. He's going to be a really good player down the line, kind of getting his toes wet. Well, more than that, I mean, he's playing. Graham Mertz, obviously Tennessee got a good idea what Graham Mertz is all about. I mean, he's a very accurate passer, but what does Mertz do better outside of the just having game experience? What is Mertz doing better than DJ right now? And, you know, how can he hurt Tennessee?
Mertz is accurate. They've taken some deep shots, but really it's not that he has a weak arm, but it's just not where he excels. I think the biggest thing we saw, and I asked Jake Slaughter, who's Florida's starting center, about it. UCF showed a lot of exotic fronts, and the kind of orchestra that the center and the quarterback had calling out different mics and sliding protections over. I think that's really where Graham Mertz, just the experience to be able to handle things. And when you have a freshman quarterback, a defensive coordinator probably just starts salivating on Tuesday. Hey, listen, we're going to have a great time. Maybe that's some of that's changed now with the sideline to helmet communication, and you can have those kind of conversations and help a freshman quarterback out. But I think that's really the biggest area, is that Graham's been here. He's earned the respect of the team, but also his experience is going to help Florida's offensive line, which at times these past 2 years has struggled to keep quarterbacks upright. We thought, you know, hey, maybe DJ's legs could help him, but I think Graham's mind and Graham's football IQ and experience has helped the offensive line just identifying things pre-snap, where DJ as a 19-year-old freshman probably doesn't have those reps or those experiences to be able to do that at the same level Graham does.
Trey Wilson, what's his injury status? I look, he's only played in two games this year, and I don't think it's been since Samford. Is he a guy that might come back this week? And any other big injuries to be on the lookout for this week? I know we get availability reports now.
Yeah. Trey looked like he was going to try to play against against Texas A&M. Didn't. Went through some warmups, but didn't go through it. Then had a minor knee surgery right before the Mississippi State game. So he's been out 3 weeks, 2 weeks since that. He went through everything, worked out, you know, in shirts and a T-shirt, put the pads on, ran routes, was catching punts, and we thought, all right, he's coming back today. We did not get an availability report because it was a SEC Big 12 matchup. So we were kind of calling and trying to figure out through sources, and it was tight-lipped on Eugene Wilson, Trey Wilson's status last week. Billy Napier even said, like, listen, I watched that Joker warm up and I thought this kid's ready to go. So it might be a situation where a player just says, hey, I don't feel 100%, and I don't want to risk injury if I don't feel 100%. Certainly, this is a big game. He was a massive part of the game plan last year. Mm-hmm. If you go back and watch that Florida-Tennessee, that first drive before he got injured. Florida's had some guys step up. Aiden Mizell, who missed last game with a foot ankle injury. And then Marcus Burke got hurt. You saw Tank Hawkins, the true freshman, fill in. But while you've had guys fill in and step into that role, Eugene Wilson's a very unique player. And Florida's offense is certainly better with him in it.
Now, Dick, when you look at this Florida team, what do you think their ceiling is? Where do you think they're going? You mentioned earlier that the easy part of their schedule is done, but I mean, mm-hmm. is the ceiling on this team changed in any way, shape, or form when you look at what's on the horizon? Is your ceiling on this team changed in any way, shape, or form?
The last 2 weeks have not changed my ceiling. I think Florida 6-6. I mean, if you look at it, they're sitting at 3-2 right now. 6 wins you would need to beat Kentucky, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State to finish the year. I'm not going to predict Florida to win this weekend at Neyland. So you start to try to find where those wins are. I think 5 wins based on losing to Miami, 6 wins would be a great year. Billy Napier could, based on the teams they would have to beat as you look at the schedule now, to get to 6 wins could get Billy Napier another year at Florida. 7 wins, certainly. 7 would mean an upset this weekend, though. So I don't know that my ceiling has changed. I think 6 would be the ceiling, and that might be a best-case scenario based on where they're sitting right now. And the floor, depending on a couple injuries and things could happen, the floor could be really, really low at, 4-8.
Interesting times for sure on where Florida, where Florida's at. That's not common ground for where they're.
It's probably more interesting from your chair than my chair.
It's not a place that you guys have certainly been at, or Florida's been at in a long time. I am kind of impressed with the way Napier's handled all of it. Mm-hmm. I know you said earlier, big buyout and everything, but I mean, he hasn't seemed to snap at anything. I mean, it doesn't feel like he's quote lost this team. I mean, it's kind of a unique deal because I mean, the Vultures have been circling on that thing for a month, and it doesn't seem like it's greatly affected this team to this point.
We're in such a unique time now. UCF has had 3 players opt out, 2 before the game and 1 since. I just saw an Alabama defensive lineman opt out. Like, you're in a weird time where if you fire Billy Napier during the season, the portal opens for Florida. Those guys have 30 days. Billy, it's also, too, there's a lot of Florida fans, and you guys have probably seen this. They're coaching for the buyout. He wants that free money. I don't know that Billy Napier gets another SEC head coaching job. And these guys are not wired the way that you or I might be and be like, hey, what, $13 million to not show up to work? Yeah, sure, I'll take it. See ya. Or actually, don't see you. You'll never hear from me again. These guys aren't wired that way. This is a dream job. Billy Napier didn't grow up a Florida fan, but being the head coach at Florida or a Tennessee is a dream job for these guys. And if you fail in the way that Billy Napier has failed and would have to continue failing to lose his job, you're not going to get this opportunity again. So they don't see it as, hey, if I just stink, I'll get a nice payday because it's going to affect the rest of their career. He's a very even-keeled guy, win or lose. I remember his first game, they beat a top-5 ranked Utah, and he came in and was like, hey, don't put a crown on us at all. Like, we're not a very good football team. We're still building a program. So whether Florida wins or loses, much to the chagrin of a lot of fans who don't think that he shows enough fire, despite getting an unsportsmanlike penalty last week for arguing a call, he kind of just, is steady Eddie and just stays, whether they're winning or losing, kind of just stays even keel. So it's not surprising to me. We asked some of the guys about it and said that he's almost even been a little bit looser inside the building in the recent weeks, despite how much outside noise and pressure there is.
Nick, I got one more on just the personnel and the offense in general, looking at running backs, obviously Trevor Etienne left, went to Georgia. Montrell Johnson, who led Florida in rushing a season ago, he's back. He's a name that's been there quite some time. We know him. How has he performed so far this season, that run game for Florida with flipping quarterbacks back and forth? And who's kind of that Batman to the – or excuse me, that Robin to the Batman of Johnson? Is it Treyon Webb? Is it Jacoby Jackson? Jackson's got three touchdowns, so I would assume it's him, but maybe it's Treyon Webb. What's that run game look like so far for Florida with everything going on with the two quarterbacks?
Well, Treyon Webb and freshman KD Daniels both missed the game last week, which gave an opportunity to Jaden Ball. Jaden Ball kind of exploded during the spring game. I think he had like 13 carries, looked really good. The biggest thing for me, though, is, and what you guys probably deal with this, whenever you get a four-star running back in, well, why isn't he playing? Well, in high school, Jaden Ball was a Wildcat quarterback. He played defensive back and played receiver and running back. So he's been asked to block SEC offensive linemen as much as me, Eric, and Brent have combined. Zero. And to me, it was really impressive. With UCF, there were really multiple fronts, brought pressure from a bunch of different angles, and Jaden Ball picked up blitzes and was really key in pass protection. And I think that's the kind of step that freshmen need to take, learning not just how to block, but who to block. And as I see Jaden doing that, I think he might end up taking more of those reps. We're not really sure what Treyon Webb's status will be. He got injured last Wednesday at practice. It was a late scratch for Florida. But I think he would be the number two, the Batman, or the Robin to Johnson's Batman. Jacoby Jackson isn't getting the kind of reps that everyone else is, just a magnet for the end zone. I think he had six carries last game and scored a touchdown. I think he had five carries at Mississippi State, scored a touchdown. Bigger back, a JUCO kid, was really the guy that we thought would be the fifth running back in this rotation, but is definitely making the most of his opportunities. But I would say, depending on Treyon Webb's health, if he's healthy, he's number two, with Jaden Ball being three or two, depending on Webb.
Tennessee and Florida, going to be a massive showdown at Neyland Stadium come Saturday nights. And for the Florida perspective, for any VolQuest.com subscribers that want to check out what's going on with Florida, Nick, what do you guys got coming up this week over at Gators Online?
We'll have a bunch of stuff. No coaching search yet, so we'll just be previewing a football game. It's been a weird season for us, so we'll have injury stuff on Wednesday. There's a ton of stuff, like you mentioned, with Eugene Wilson, Treyon Webb, to look at. And then some player features on some guys who have stepped up these past 2 weeks and are filling new roles and really helping Florida win these past two games, and maybe some rivalry history. If there's not much to look forward to Saturday, maybe give some Florida fans some history to look back on and feel good about before the kickoff at 7 o'clock from Neyland.
Nick Dellatore, man, appreciate it as always. Thanks so much for the time.
Have a good one, guys.
Thanks, Nick.
Great stuff as always from Gators Online's Nick Dellatore. Really appreciate his insight on the Florida Gators. It's going to be a big week, Brent Hubbs, Tennessee, and Florida, and no better place to get dialed into all this than at VolQuest.com throughout the week.
Absolutely. And listen, I understand there's a lot of frustration, but a lot of football left to be played. Tennessee's got things they've got to work on, and we'll see how much growth Tennessee has this week and moving forward, as Tennessee has plenty of things in front of them. They've just got to go and you know, clean up a bunch of stuff. Particularly on the offensive side of the ball. As Rob said earlier, it's not just one thing. They've got to clean up a bunch. They get things cleaned up. It'd be interesting to see the growth and development of this offense over the next month.
Got the first glance up on the site from last night. Of course, podcast today. We got the roundtable coming up tomorrow, the matchup piece on Thursday, 10 things I think, the mailbag coming up, Game Quest, plenty more to get into to get you set for Tennessee and Florida, a big one at Neyland Stadium coming up on Saturday. Big thank you, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being a part of the show. That phone number is 865-524-5888, 865-524-5888, or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They're who we trust. They've been local and who many in the area have trusted since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. For Rob Lewis, Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kane. Thank you, as always, for joining us here on the VolQuest Tuesday podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.